The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
It's time to hear the truth, unfiltered. It's Sean Salisbury, unfiltered. He's played football, baseball, and basketball. He played pro football for 10 years, and he's been a broadcaster for 12 years. Now he takes it to the internet radio airwaves. Get ready for sports talk like you've never heard before. Now, here's Sean Salisbury.
Ah, good Tuesday morning to you. I hope you guys can hear me okay. We got a miserable storm here. And when miserable storms hit Dallas like this, phone lines and all kinds of crud goes into oh my gosh mode. So I'm not one of those guys that does, but people panic. So schools get closed and everything. But this is going to put a monkey wrench in all the Super Bowl plans because it's supposed to be one of the worst winter storms in a lot of years here the next handful of days. So you partiers and you drivers, be safe. It may put a monkey wrench in all these big plans they have in Dallas, but we're here, snow on the ground. It's going to be icy and all that stuff. Airport closed. It's going to affect people getting in for parties and things. So this is not exactly what Dallas had to be a host for the Super Bowl, but they will continue to do their best. But I'm not hosting anything, so they, but we in Dallas. So good morning to you. Boy, is there a lot on the plate. And it's ironic that yesterday I said neither one of these two teams will do anything that would cause them, embarrassment or that would do the right thing and you wouldn't hear anything come out of it. And you won't. But wouldn't you know that the NFL's created it? Now, I don't understand, and I'm a huge fan of the commissioner. I think Commissioner Goodell has done a great job. I really do. I think he's done a great job of policing. At times, I think they over-police. I don't like where I don't like is I think they go overboard on the fines and the physicality of football and the way football was being. I mean, we sure had no problem with it a handful of years ago. Excuse me, a handful of years ago, but we do now. I mean, we are getting to the point where we're softening up the league, no matter what anybody says. But that being said, I think the commissioner has done a great job. But it makes no sense to me during Super Bowl week why, when addressed, the commissioner. It's almost like going to a business or your company and human resources announcing what you talked about in a human resources meeting, which is obviously against the law. But how in the world the commissioner could stand there and say not one interviewed, 20 players, and not one came to Ben Roethlisberger's defense during the investigation into alleged rape? Now, why now, folks? Why would the commissioner stand up there and bus toss Ben Roethlisberger? Now, listen, I put on Facebook, I got a lot of people, don't defend him. I'm not defending shit, okay? I don't agree with, if it was me, I'd have put, if it was me and it was my daughter that he, if in fact, but remember, he didn't go to, he didn't spend time in jail and did not, wasn't indicted. Ben Roethlisberger was, it supposedly swiped clean. Now, maybe where there's smoke, there's fire, I don't know. But don't believe everything you read and hear. I don't know if, I've been a couple times, said hi to him, no big deal, having that conversation. I don't know if he's a good guy or an asshole. I don't know if he did this thing to these girls and the rest of it. You know, we've talked about this stuff and addressed it before. Be a good guy, stay out of trouble, all those things, which hopefully he's learned his lesson. Let's hope. Let's hope he's learned his lesson. I mean, I know my daughter wouldn't have went to the restroom with him. So while we can talk about the stupidity and no means no, of course it does, and all those things, but what kind of person's rolling into the bathroom with some dude in a bar, an athlete, with a so-called reputation? And she, you know what? No offense, she's an idiot. Or then someone said, "Well, I loved being with you," and sent him an email or a message afterwards. I mean, the he said, she said stuff doesn't fly with me, folks. And if you've been in the so-called public eye or what have you, you're going to get a he said, she said story a million times. Now, he may be a pig. He may have a background. I wasn't there at the bars. I don't know, and I don't defend it. Matter of fact, I abhor it. I think it's disgusting. There's a few things in life you never do. You don't lay your hands on a woman in a hurtful way. You don't beat or hit kids. You don't abuse women. You just don't do those things. You try to be honorable, and you sure as heck don't take advantage of a situation like that where you get physical and force yourself upon somebody. Those are, to me, you got to lock them up and throw away the key when the justice system takes its toll. Now, if it doesn't, then you got to, we've tried to move on. The guy's trying to be forgiven, I think. I always try to look at the good side of everything. I just do. That's my MO. That's just what I do. Now, I'll break it down honestly. You guys know that. I'm not a fence sitter. If I met Ben Roethlisberger and he was a dick to me, I'd be, I'd let you know. But I think he's trying to be better. Sometimes guys are screwed up and have to get fixed and have to, there's a lot of people go through a lot of difficult times, and you in your own life go through difficult times too. The problem is we don't read about it on the internet and don't talk about it at Super Bowl week. Because, no offense, outside of your circle of friends and your people and your family, nobody cares. Unfortunately, everybody wants to talk. I personally don't care who Ben Roethlisberger dates or who he sleeps with. And if he's banging a girl in the bathroom, that's between him and her. If he's forcing himself on her and doing those things that he shouldn't do, then his ass ought to be walked down to jail and you ought to lock him up and throw away the key. Pretty simple. But why the hell a woman's walking in a bar to a bathroom, and decides she wants to go in there and have a little fun? Well, we all like to have a little fun, but there's also have some sense. Have some sense. And I always find it amazing that it's like Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen and five women. It's Charlie Sheen got arrested for a thing of cocaine, a suitcase full of cocaine, or had to go to rehab, a suitcase full of cocaine, and got in trouble again and is in rehab. Well, it's Charlie and five women. The five women have a life, don't they? But we never get to name them because nobody cares other than their circle of close friends. So they're protected. Yet it's Ben Roethlisberger and another person. That I've never understood the fact that when two people are involved in some act, that we never let anybody know about the other one, that the girl's protection is more important than the guy if it was reversed, or if it's a celebrity, they get screwed and the other one doesn't. I've never understood that concept. Because you know what? They're all equal lives. They all have something to live for. Good gracious. But in this Ben Roethlisberger case, my only problem with this is, like I said, I don't condone it. If it was my daughter and he'd have tried something like that, I'd have put a bullet right in his mouth, okay? Really simple, if that's the case, the alleged case. But I sure as hell don't believe everything I read and hear. The he said, she said, drunks in a bar are the ones commenting. Save it. Don't care. My biggest problem with this is why the commissioner feels the need to tell us that not one of his teammates came to his rescue. And what teammate is going to come to a rescue of a guy that's been alleged, that is alleged rapist with a girl in a bar? I mean, unless they were there seeing it. If you're a guy sitting at home, how would you know? He didn't come to his defense. Maybe they don't like him. Remember when we said he was stripped of his captaincy, he had to win the respect of his teammates back? He did, and he's still earning it. Doesn't mean, it's all on the field. They'll be swinging off his nuts, trust me, if they win a Super Bowl and he makes a play. They're all going to love him for the 60 minutes of the game and in the locker room afterwards celebrating. So, of course, you don't come to somebody's rescue and apply your name to it. Now, I always believe you have a guy's back and don't throw him under the bus. But you got to be honorable and honest when you're whether it's put under oath or something else. You don't lie. But that doesn't make a hoot and a holler of how he plays on the field as long as they respect him as a player. It's his life if they respect him if they disrespect him or respect him off the field. That's stuff that Ben Roethlisberger and his teammates will have to work out. Sure hasn't affected them this year on the field. Life issues and all that, that's I don't understand why we think it's okay for us to meddle. If it is true, then he'll serve his time. And if it isn't true and you have your own opinion of him, great, form it. No problem. You're entitled to it. If you think he's a punk, he's a punk. And that's your opinion. But I don't think we should get too involved in talking about exactly what he did and what he didn't do when you're not there. Like when I hear somebody say, oh, he was an asshole in college. And I ask the person, did you go to college with him? No. Oh, really? Well, I heard a guy and a girl, oh, okay, yeah, well, if my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle. I get that part. The he said, she said, save it. Oh, I couldn't remember. I heard that he was a the chased ladies in college. Who didn't? Good gracious. And it's always the guy who chased ladies. What about the woman that was the sorority girl banging 15 guys? She's okay because we don't know her name? Okay, I'm not defending Roethlisberger. I could care less what Ben does away, as long as it doesn't affect. I don't care. I hope he gets his life in order for him. Hope he makes amends, and I hope that he can repair it, because you know what? I like good things. I like good endings to stories. I do. Whether you're a Packer fan or whether you're a Steeler fan, I like good endings to stories. So I root for guys to come back and change their life and change somebody else's life after making a big mistake. I do. I care about that. But I don't care. I mean, what went on between there is not my idea to speculate. I wasn't in the bathroom washing my hands while he was banging her or attempting to. My biggest problem with all this, and that's, hasn't the commissioner gone over this? Hasn't this statement been released months and months ago? I could see if they said, well, they heard it again in a bar in Fort Worth while he's in town. He gets it. I mean, they walk off the plane, and the commissioner is already throwing him under the bus, said not one Pittsburgh Steeler came to his back. What does Roger Goodell have to gain from that? And I do respect, I love, like I said, I think we have a great commissioner. I disagree with what he did. Who walks on, oh, that's right. It's Super Bowl week. Two teams that off the field are kind of boring when it comes to not giving you quotes you want to hear, and that they just do go about their business. They kick everybody else's ass during the season, and you're not getting the quotes. It's so funny. We'll find guys for quotes and for saying stuff outlandish and look after them and arrest them, and the commissioner will come down on them. But when the commissioner himself stands up there and wholeheartedly created news yesterday, he didn't report it. He created it. He reported something that's old news, as if we thought that Ben Roethlisberger's teammates supported him after he stripped him of his captaincy through this brutal thing that happened. Or things, plural. As if we thought that. The number is 888-346-9144. Like him or not, that's fine. What did the commissioner have to gain by standing up there and saying not one teammate came to his rescue when I interviewed him? Now, is that not creating news and causing trouble? And just trying to open up a can of worms during the Super Bowl week, I think it's a Bush League bitch-ass move. Regardless if it was me or the commissioner or you or anybody else, why start something like that during the week? And I haven't made my pick yet, but I did pick the Packers to go to the Super Bowl back in August. But you know what? Regardless of who wins, I respect both teams. And if Roethlisberger goes out and plays well and shoves it up everybody's ass, I think it'll be kind of funny. I really do. I don't have a problem with it. I don't. If he wins, great for the Steelers. If he wins, great. I'm not on the payroll for either team, so I root for good football. And you know, you want your predictions and all that to come true. But you know what? I love both teams, and I think both teams are great. But why the commissioner felt the need to basically throw Roethlisberger under the bus during Super Bowl week on old news to rehash shit that because the media wants to create it during Super Bowl week and hide stories until it comes out and then, boom, hit the world with it. Why? Somebody tell me why. Look, no offense, the commissioner overstepped his bounds and tried to show way too much power because he's the commissioner. And I'd tell him that to his face, don't care. Because I'm a fan of Roger Goodell. I really am. I think he's one of the better when it comes to tightening up the reins around here. He's done it right. He created news on purpose. There was no need to tell us that Ben Roethlisberger's 20 teammates didn't come to his defense. Not one of them. During Super Bowl week. Why not during the bye week? Why not during week 7? I thought didn't the commissioner himself, isn't he the one that lessened Ben Roethlisberger's suspension? Isn't he the one who took it from 6 games to 4 and lessened the suspension, then turns right around and says nobody came to his defense during Super Bowl week and it's not even media day? Bush League move. Simple, plain, and simple. And you know what? For things that people say, we can fine coaches for what they say about officials. Somebody ought to be able to fine the commissioner for overloading his mouth with his ass, because that's exactly what he did on Monday. Like Roethlisberger or not, out of line, over his bounds, and it was just a perfect way to create news. That's all the commissioner did yesterday. He did what what at times dirty media does. That's exactly what he did. I don't respect the decision. I don't respect what he said. But I love the commissioner. One-time things, I'll love him again tomorrow. But you know what? Out of line. Period. Period. Didn't need to do that. And I assure you, what Ben Roethlisberger, what the commissioner said, Ben Roethlisberger doesn't give a fuzzy rat's ass. He wants to be a role model now, he said, be a good dad, and he wants to say, and you know what? People could turn around and be role models, and I like that, if Ben Roethlisberger's true, if he's right. If this isn't just bullshit talk about some guy who's arrogant and at times not remorseful, and those both stick to him, but one hell of a player. And I choose to keep my thoughts to on-the-field stuff during Super Bowl week because that's what I'm trying to do, unless some guy breaks the law. I thought it was weak. Your thoughts at 888-346-9144. And don't call me up because you're a Packer fan, because I am as well. What a great organization. Don't call me up and tell me you know about Ben Roethlisberger just because you love Aaron Rodgers. I don't want to hear it. You want to call up and give me the right point? Have at it. Love your opinion. And if you're a Pittsburgh fan, don't call up and defend Roethlisberger as if you were in the bar telling me you know everything if you don't know. But you can give me your opinion on the guy and on Roger Goodell. But don't give me bullshit. And he said, she said, well, I had heard a story when he was in college as a sophomore. Because I don't care. That's the only time you'll ever get rung up on this show, giving me he said, she said bullshit over something that's not, whether it is true or isn't true, that you don't know. And unless you witness it with your own eyes, or unless you were dating the girl that he went with, or unless you and Ben Roethlisberger were in the bathroom together, I don't want to hear that part of it. But if you've got something smart to say about the commissioner, do you agree with the commissioner throwing Ben under the bus during Super Bowl week for absolutely no reason? Oh, and he'll make some plays in the Super Bowl. And Packer fans, you probably should be a little more pissed off because he did you a disservice. Because right now, I don't know many quarterbacks that deal with adversity more than that guy in Pittsburgh. So he just opened up another can of worms. But if I was Ben Roethlisberger, I would actually call the commissioner and say, you were out of line. And that if you're allowed to say that, then a coach, we ought to be able to fine you for tossing me under the bus. I thought it was Bush League. I'm going to come back and talk about the defensive most valuable player in the NFL. Goes to show you more that the voters are out of their damn mind and don't understand football very much. I guess you only got to play in 12 games, 11 or 12 games, to win the MVP award and have a whole bunch of good players around you. And the winner is a special player. But I don't know. You tell me. Did he deserve it? Sean Salisbury, Voice America Sports. We're unfiltered. We're coming at you hard and fast today and unfiltered. But I don't really care what Ben Roethlisberger's teammates said months ago during Super Bowl week. We'll be right back.
What's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America show or host? For the latest news, visit the iRadio blog at iradioblog.com.
Have we got a high-energy, all-access sports show for you? It's Outside the Huddle, starring Lemont Williams with co-host John Inglesby. Each week, join Lemont and John as they take callers, discuss the week's top stories in the world of sports, and sit down with active and former players to discuss their transition from sports to business. Outside the Huddle is a great resource for players making career transitions both on and off the field. Tune in Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, and 5 Pacific for Outside the Huddle on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Looking for a top show about horse racing and handicapping?
Looking to play the ponies?
Join us every week for Winning Ponies with Ed Meyer. This show is the perfect complement to the Winning Ponies website, where you'll go inside and behind the scenes with the top jockeys, trainers, agents, and handicappers in the world of horse racing. Listen for top plays for the weekend and the spot play of the week, and win prizes just for listening. Winning Ponies with Ed Meyer is live Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Sports Network.
Are you ready to talk football with the greatest wide receiver player and coach in NFL history? Tune in to Wide Open with Andre Rison. Andre is ready to talk to you and give his thoughts on the sport. There'll be celebrity guests, coaches, players, artists, and more. He'll go beyond the game with a look from the coach's point of view and feature a high school player each week. Tune in to Wide Open with host Andre Rison, featured Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
The opening kickoff is a beauty.
It's a fly ball deep right field. Back goes O'Neal. He's at
tough
the
shot.
Got it with 2.8 seconds left
to left. I don't care where they put him. This one is out of here.
From high school to the pros, we cover everything. Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
Locked in to Sean Salisbury, unfiltered, on the Voice America Sports Channel. To make your voice heard, call in to 888-346-9144. That's 888-346-9144. Or send an email to seansals@gmail.com. That's seansals@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Well, you know, with this Ben Roethlisberger thing, I have a question. If the commissioner suspended, now Ben said that he knows for a fact that players defended him. He knows for a fact, and he's grateful that they did. He said he knows for a fact when the commissioner talked to him, they suspended him. So somebody's lying. Now you tend to wonder who's the one that's talking the bullshit. Now, if you're the commissioner, just let me ask you this, and you're looking for a guy to get better and do better things, and you're saying, show me and let me gain some trust in you so we can get you back on the right path doing the right thing. This is me speculating. It was a 6-game suspension, right? It was a 6-game suspension. So my question is, if nobody defended him, if what he did was heinous, which if it was true, it is heinous, it's sick. But if he didn't, he's not in jail, he's out, you know, waiting for his chance. If nobody defended him, not one guy, and the commissioner's making a decision based on his feelings, why did he lessen the suspension from 6 games to 4? Is he on the Rooney's Nizzuts? Did he just love Ben's apology speech? Is there... The Steelers are such a great organization, we have to lessen the suspension because Mr. Rooney came up with the Rooney Rule and he's trying to do the right thing and he's got a quarterback that Pittsburgh needs to get to a championship? Or did we really have a couple players defend him and it just doesn't make for good TV and radio and newspaper to say that about Ben Roethlisberger? So exactly, if the commissioner is going to tell me that not one player defended Ben Roethlisberger in this, then I'd love the reasons why he lessened the suspension from 6 games to 4. How about that speech during Super Bowl week? Can you address that one for me? Nobody defended him. There's been more than one rumor out there and more than one talk that he was. You know, doing things that he shouldn't have done. And yet you still lessen the suspension by 2 games, and then you're telling me 5 months later, oh, nobody came to his rescue. What gives here, folks? You know, the commissioner's not immune to being criticized. He's not. He's not immune to being criticized. I can love him, and I do. Hey, we've criticized wives. If you're married, sometimes we've had to criticize our children, criticize ourselves. Criticize our owners, criticize our bosses. They criticize us. It's life. It's called make a mistake, get criticized, and move forward. Do something stupid, get slapped in the hand, move forward. Do something that Ben Roethlisberger supposedly did, get suspended, serve your suspension, and move forward. Try to do the right thing, not the wrong thing. But no. What? And I always find it funny. Oh, you can't say that about the commissioner. Well, the hell I can't. He's a grown man, a human being. So am I. He makes mistakes. He didn't walk on water. He's not God. I'm not in the NFL offices as his executive assistant. I'm a former player. I have opinions on former on rules and on what should go on. I'm entitled, as are you. If he's entitled to throw somebody on the bus, I don't remember when anybody died and left him God, or when he was, when somebody started praying to him. And I promise you, I'm probably one of the commissioner's most staunch supporters and agreeing what he did, what he's done most of the time as a commissioner. I think he'll, if he gets this collective bargaining agreement done, he's going to have a great legacy as a commissioner. You don't want this hanging over your head. It should be done now. They say, and here's what makes me laugh. He and Damari Smith of the head of the players union say they're going to get after it even more. They're going to basically speed up the process and go at it more rigorous. Why haven't you now? Well, why haven't you gone about it now? Oh, all of a sudden, just because there's hype and you're worried now that you guys are going to get to the table more, that's what got to draw a couple grown men to the table that are in charge of a whole bunch of other grown men? I don't think that's the type of leadership that gets you to places you need to go. Just to show you how popular the NFL is, that awful, god-awful booty call, nasty Pro Bowl, 55-41 game of no football being played, is like the highest-rated Pro Bowl in years. Are you kidding? That ought to tell you how popular the NFL is. And so why can't two grown men get in an office and he's, you know, give and take, both sides win. That's what a negotiation really is, when both sides feel like they've won. And let's move forward and get the regular the stuff in place to play a 2011 season. Okay? But this he said, she said, and going back and forth drives me nuts. So the commissioner's not above criticism, folks. He's a grown man and a human being and makes mistakes. If you're afraid to criticize him, or if some radio show's afraid to criticize him, or some TV network's afraid to criticize him, tough. I'm not. What he said about Ben Roethlisberger, I thought was bad timing and done in poor taste. Now, somebody, if you're a good media person, have the balls to ask the commissioner, then why did he lessen the suspension? And let me have an answer. And if there is one out there that I missed, somebody tell me what it is. Because I'd like to know, if nobody supported Ben, why he lessened the suspension from 6 to 4 games. It's in my craw today because just like I said we shouldn't do, we created news, and the news was created by the commissioner of all people during Super Bowl week. That being said, he's one of my favorite commissioners we've had. We had Roselle and Tagliabue and Goodell, and he is really good because he's changed the scope of the way people look at the NFL, that it's not just a bunch of hoodlums or a bunch of, you know, punks that are rich that aren't trying to make a difference. And he's trying to get the ones that are punks and just money makers, trying to get them to be looked at a little different and get their butt in gear and realize that this is a privilege, not a right, to play in the NFL. The Defensive Player of the Year Award, the number here is 888-346-9144. The Defensive MVP Award went to Troy Polamalu, AP, the AP Award. Polamalu, Clay Matthews, and James Harrison in that order. Those are the three that should have been in that order, or should have been in the top three. My question is, I think Clay Matthews missed one game because of a hamstring or an injury. I think Troy missed 4. I think it's pretty obvious that the numbers, while Polamalu's special, folks, and I don't have a complaint really either way because both of them are USC Trojans with long hair. I love them. I think they're both great. I think Polamalu, I could understand if you were starting a defense and you were a new franchise, I could understand why either one of those guys would be your first pick. Because Polamalu makes plays in the secondary as a safety that the normal human being couldn't make if he was standing on the player himself. He runs, he intercepts, he catches, he's spectacular. But I'm trying to figure out, did he make more of a difference this year? Could that team still survive without him? I believe they could. Now, not as good, agreed. But could they survive? I mean, there's a world of difference when Polamalu's not in the lineup. But they're still unbelievably special. down in Green Bay, Woodson special. Tremont Williams is going to be really special, but I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that Clay Matthews made that thing roll, didn't he? Pretty obvious. And while I don't want to say I'm shocked, I'm close to shocked that Polamalu edged him out and Matthews played three more games on a team that was beat up and injured most of the year, so he had to even step his game up far more to keep that team alive in the playoff run. Can't go wrong either way. Can't go wrong either way, because great players. But it was a bit shocking. The first two, you can flip-flop in order, and Harrison, I think, deserved to be three. And it's funny because here's a guy, two guys in the top three on one team, and Harrison fined dollar after dollar after dollar. So apparently the people who vote didn't hold that against him. And I don't blame him, because I think half his fines weren't legit. I think the NFL targeted him and went after him, and they did. But I think it's pretty obvious that there's a reason the Pittsburgh Steelers are sitting where they are, a playmaker, a quarterback, and two of the top three defensive players in the NFL reside on your defense. Pretty damn good. And in Green Bay, pretty good when the last two defensive reigning MVPs would have or should have been on Green Bay with Charles Woodson and now Clay Matthews, but Matthews finished second. And if I know Clay Matthews, it's going to drive him to be really, really angry. And another thing Packer fans should be grateful for, angry that Ben Roethlisberger is going to probably come into the game playing a little irritated, but also grateful that all that the media has done is piss off another Green Bay Packer. Pissed off Aaron Rodgers, the people, and the players by not voting him to the Pro Bowl. All he's done is gone on an unbelievable run and shoved it in everybody's face and actually, in my opinion, was worthy of being the starter in the Pro Bowl, although they wouldn't play anyway because he's laughing last because he didn't have to go to Hawaii because his team's in the Super Bowl. And don't kid yourself. People get snubbed on things. If you're a great player, a great athlete, human nature, it pushes you to be great again and even better, and it drives you. And Clay Matthews will come into this game angry as hell. I played with his uncle for a lot of years, Bruce Matthews, and I played against his daddy, Clay. I know the family. This isn't he said, she said. All it did when he woke up and that vote wasn't his, it's good luck. The offensive line is going to have to step their game up against this fool because he'll play like a dog, like a man possessed. Because don't kid yourself, he feels snubbed today. Polamalu's happy, but if Polamalu would have missed out, Troy's not a talker, he would have felt the same way. But you know what? I don't think Troy expected to win the award, in my opinion. I think it was a foregone conclusion that it was Clay Matthews' award, but good for Troy. Like I said, I love it either way because I have a tremendous amount of respect for both. Known the Matthews family for a lot of years, and also am a huge fan and respect of the way Troy Polamalu goes about his business, and a great football player. So nobody's going to complain about Troy winning it, but in truth, Clay Matthews deserved it this year. So we're rolling with this morning at 888-346-9144. Bad weather, people having trouble now getting into town. Cars and traffic's crazy. Cars are stopped. People aren't moving. It's a crazy scene. Airport's closed. So not going to be a whole lot of love in Dallas for quite some time. I don't know if today, tomorrow, the next day, but it'll put a monkey wrench in a lot of plans. But, hey, happens. I remember we did a Super Bowl in Atlanta, and the Super Bowl's in Atlanta. We had to do our studio shows outside. It was as miserable as could be. It was awful. But it was still fun. And it may not be a lot of fun for a lot of people. This is Dallas we're looking at, folks. But Green Bay and Pittsburgh are right at home. Hell, we ought to leave the roof open. That's the way they ought to play on Sunday. Have a little winter feel in Super Bowl. I think it'd be so cool. The fans would hate it. But maybe not, because most are going to be Packer Steeler fans anyway. Corporate America may hate it. But I think it's pretty cool because it'd be fun to see some winter in Dallas and see how these two teams play, their sleeves rolled up, getting after it. I would love it. So was the commissioner out of line and saying what he said about Ben Roethlisberger during Super Bowl week? And who should have won the MVP, Troy Polamalu or Clay Matthews on the defensive side of the ball? We got a lot to talk about here. You know, Super Bowl ticket prices, the broker prices. I always love how it's supposed to be illegal to scalp, and USA Today has got a great article and, you know, an article about it. I mean, really, in truth, that's one of those laws. Come on now. If you're dumb enough to pay, if the ticket price is $500 and you're willing to pay $3,000, they should put the person who bought the tickets in jail, not the person who sold them. That's the way I look at it. If I'm standing there and I got two tickets for $500 a piece, and somebody gives me $5,000 for what is a face value of $1,000 between the two, I'll be honest with you. We ought to throw the dumbass in jail who spent $4,000 extra on the tickets, not the guy who sold them. But they are right now 27% higher. They're up 27% at more than $4,000 a piece. The most expensive so far for a regular ticket, $15,946 for a seventh row seat on the 50-yard line at Cowboys Stadium. Do you love it that much, folks? I'm just curious. Honestly. I guess maybe if you haven't been, and this is your team, and your father's dream was to go to a game and has never been to a game, and you're treating him to a game, or your mother, and it's one of the great all-time feelings. I understand that. I'm not at $15,000. I don't. I would say, Dad, let's go on the greatest two-week vacation on the planet for $15,000, and we'll watch this game together. Let's have a little party at the house. Watch this game together. We'll buy a new, 100-inch TV screen, and have the best seat in the house. And then let's go on a vacation to a warm weather place. That would probably be more my suggestion. And my father, if he was alive, would have said the same thing. He would have looked at me and slapped me upside the head for spending almost $16,000 on a ticket. The least expensive ticket is right now $21.89 for an upper bowl end zone seat, which is the top of the stadium in the end zone. You're still paying almost $2,200. The face value for all tickets goes from $600 to $1,200. I am sorry, folks. I don't love football enough, even if it was my team. If it was my brother playing and he didn't get tickets, I wouldn't spend $16,000 on a ticket. How you like them apples? And it had nothing to do with its money, its principle, although money matters. I would not spend $15,000 to watch anybody on the planet play in a game. My kid maybe, but my kid wouldn't make me because my kid would have tickets far cheaper than that and wouldn't make his old man pay $15,000, I would hope. I'd get those at face value. So really, that's not a fair comparison because I don't think many people, like I said, you get those from your kid. But I, no offense, there's no concert. Even if the Beatles came back to life and John Lennon all of a sudden was resurrected, I wouldn't pay $15,000, $16,000 to go watch this concert. I just wouldn't. I'd throw in the CD and say, damn, you guys were good then. You're still good now. How was the concert, folks? That's just me. But I guess if you got money to burn, that doesn't matter. But to me, if you got money to burn, then you go all out. Get the suite for $200,000+ and invite 30 of your best friends and have a party. Or rent out the greatest place on the planet, have a party for 50 of your favorite people, 100 of your favorite people, and really enjoy it. I know you guys think I'm different, but I wouldn't do it. I'd pay more for a Red Sox World Series ticket than I would the Super Bowl, although I still wouldn't pay $15,000 to go watch the Red Sox play. I admire you folks that love your team so much that you do, but I don't love it that much. Passionate for it, yes. Love it enough to do that, no. Funny thing about it is I'm not even going to the game. Every year I've been invited, I've gone, they've done a pregame show, I've given my tickets away or sold them. Yeah, sold them, and for much higher than face value in the past, you bet. I'm not going to the game, and it's going to be a great game. I've looked forward to this Super Bowl as much as any in a long time. But I'm going to be watching it at home, exactly where I need to be. No, I take it back. I'll be in Vegas, so I'll be watching it there, but wouldn't watch, wouldn't go. If someone, you know, if I had my two tickets, somebody else would be going in my place. I would not go. I'm Sean Salisbury. It's Voice America Sports. Got a lot of time left on this show for you to chime in at 888-346-9144. We are Unfiltered.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Get ready to go inside the minds and behind the scenes with the top professional athletes, celebrities, and music entertainers. It's a sports show like no other.
Keeping it real.
Keeping it real with former NFL wide receiver Jairus McIntyre is real talk with in-depth interviews, topical discussions, and a whole lot of comedy. You'll hear from the entertainers, the athletes, and the fans.
Keeping it real.
Keeping it real with Jairus McIntyre is broadcast live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Now you can take your favorite Voice America radio program with you anywhere. Sign up for our mobile app if you have an iPhone, Android, or BlackBerry. The Voice America Interactive Radio Player, powered by Aircast, gives you the freedom to listen to any of our programs anywhere, live, and on demand. No registration is required. Listen to your favorite Voice America hosts and discover new ones. Download the Voice America mobile app for iPhone, Android, or BlackBerry, powered by Aircast. Visit the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Do you love sports talk? Can't get enough sports talk? Have we got a show for you? It's about the NFL training camps, Super Bowl previews, a look at the new starting quarterbacks, and weekly key injuries. We'll take your calls and emails right on the air. Former Philadelphia Eagle James Loving is your host, and you never know who'll drop by for a co-host spot or an interview on the spot. Tune in to Loving That Sports Talk with James Loving every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
The fans now have a voice to speak their mind. No holds barred.
They need to finish his ass and then move on.
I just think that the coach made a mistake.
All crazy.
NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL. Speak up.
Speak up.
Or forever hold your mouth.
We ain't playing around here.
Voice America Sports.
Locked in to Sean Salisbury, Unfiltered, on the Voice America Sports Channel. To make your voice heard, call in to 888-346-9144. That's 888-346-9144. Or send an email to SeanSals@gmail.com. That's SeanSals@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Shocking news of the day that Urban Meyer yesterday signed with ESPN to be a studio analyst. I know that catches everybody by surprise, right? Catches you all by surprise. You can't believe it. I'm sure that's the case. I wonder if he's going to be any good. I thought that Nick Saban took over on the national championship game pregame show. Nick was more outgoing. I need a coach when he's up there. I think Cowher does a really good job. Gruden on Monday Night Football. Urban Meyer, if he's the problem with most, a lot of coaches, I won't say most, a lot of coaches and analysts, is they're afraid to give their honest opinion because they want to get back into coaching. They don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Now, it's a warm body and a national championship coach, and you stick him in there for a guy who's going to miss, going to be working Fridays and Saturdays on college football. I could have swore he told us that he wanted to spend more time with his family. So if he's working Friday and Saturday, just to be safe, he'll have to come in probably Thursday night for a production meeting, I would think. I don't know. I guess. I know darn well that football let me spend more time with my family than broadcasting television did. I spend more time away from my family, far more time away from my family than broadcast television than I did as a player. And I know people are going to say, oh, coaching's far more dominating than being a player. Yeah, it takes a lot of time. But like I said, there's still ways, if I was a head coach, there's still ways to allow you to see your family I don't believe, and I'll say it one more time, that coaches need 20 hours a day to prepare for a game. You just don't. If it takes 20 hours a day to prepare for a game, then you're not real smart, and your ability to consume information needs work. Coaches waste as much time as any profession on the planet. Bullshitting, talking, the rest. And you got to discuss, but it doesn't take 20 hours a day. It just doesn't. It doesn't. And anybody with any sense knows. It's called obsessive-compulsive neurotic. Worried that the other guy's studying 21 hours and you're only studying 20. It's called working smart. You don't have to work long. Working long, you got to, hey, I'm not poo-pooing away. Being a coach takes you away from your family. Of course it does. And it's a brutal job. Very brutal. But it doesn't take 20 hours a day to be a head coach, successful head coach. It just doesn't. Now, if that's the way people approach it, fine. There's been plenty of successful head coaches that also wake up and have breakfast with their family, that actually take some time at lunch to enjoy a lunch and maybe go home for dinner, then come back and watch tape till 2 in the morning. You can do it. You can sleep 6 hours a night and still be a successful head coach. I don't require much sleep, 5-6 hours, but you do not have to work 20-hour days. I think it comes down to the fact that coaches waste time. I mean, it's not always the coach who study. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of coaches that stay awake 22 hours, 20 hours a day and try to survive, and our average coaches have been fired before. You know, it happens. But I don't agree that you have to completely dismantle your family to be a football coach. I don't buy it, and I never will. Tom Landry sure dealt with it pretty good, kept his family together. That it didn't affect him, did it? It's called prioritizing and understanding where it goes. What did Tom Landry see? Say faith, family, football in that order? You can make it work. Well, congratulations to Urban Meyer. I like Urban. Hell of a football coach. I don't think his coaching career is done by any stretch of the imagination. What's he going to tell me? I didn't learn much from Urban as an analyst during the couple games I saw him on, or the studio work that I saw him on. But you know what? He's a great football coach, and he'll be coaching again, I would imagine. That's my guess. But if you just a word of advice is, please don't be afraid to criticize other college coaches or other players because you want to get back into it. If that's the case, then he shouldn't be hired as an analyst just because he's Urban Meyer. Because if he doesn't tell the fans anything after about 2 games, unless you're an Urban Meyer worshiper, after about 2 studio shows, nobody's going to want to hear him. Nobody cares if he's not telling you anything that some yahoo off the street can't tell you. A lot of times, certain people off the street will tell you more because they got an opinion and aren't afraid to voice it. So if you're Urban Meyer, you got great college background. You're an amazing, you're a great football coach. You know inside information that a lot of people don't. Tell us, please. That'll make for a great studio show. Truth is, it won't be hard to be the best coach on college football there because Lou Holtz is a great motivational speaker. He's not a good studio football guy. He's just not. I'm sorry to tell you, Notre Dame fan, because I love Coach Holtz. Love the way he did his motivational speeches, love the way he gets after it. He's not good at talking college football, even though that's what he's done most of his life. Everybody's great, everybody's this. He's not. So Urban Meyer can take over if he wants to jump in there and be 2 coaches on it. The problem is, will Urban Meyer tell me something because he wants to be opinionated and tell the truth and get after it, or is he going to hide it because he's afraid to let us all know because he wants to get back into coaching? That's the problem. And will Urban Meyer criticize Florida's coach if Will Muschamp goes out there and screws the pooch? Will he? That's what I want to know. Will he? If he won't, then he doesn't deserve, or criticize or be fair, to be honest. If he won't, then there's no need for me to watch. There's just no need for me to watch. Because I don't need an analyst that either kisses ass or criticizes just to criticize, or will he criticize Florida State harder than he would criticize Florida because he played against them in their arrival? That's not right either. Just tell it like it is and not worry about what athletic director, because you know what? You're Urban Meyer. Athletic director is going to hire you whether you criticize their school or not, if you do it the right way. There's a way to do it without being an idiot about it. So Urban Meyer at ESPN, and that can be no surprise. No surprise at all. And good for him and good for them. you add another name to the mix, but will it enhance your college broadcast? We'll find out. We'll find out soon enough. Ticket prices are through the roof for the Super Bowl. 888-346-9144 is the number. Our commissioner was out of line, what he said about Ben Roethlisberger, that nobody came to his rescue, create news during the Super Bowl. Ben Roethlisberger wants to be a role model. Well, he's got a long way to go, but at least he recognizes that he needs to be. So let's hope that he gets it. And Clay Matthews finished second in the MVP voting on the defensive side of the ball, which I thought was wrong. And I love my USC's Troy Polamalu. But it should have been Matthews, Polamalu, James Harrison. Polamalu missed four games this year. He had three-quarters of the schedule. He played, missed a quarter of the schedule. Maybe the voters like Troy more, and he is a huge difference maker and a huge impact. And a guy I want on my team, as I do Clay Matthews. But just looking at it, because I don't have a bias between either one. They're both USC Trojans, both great players. Both have, you know, commercials for shampoo. Okay, I don't care about that. I'm just looking at it every single breakdown you can. And to me, Clay Matthews deserved to be the defensive MVP. And I think outside the voters, it just goes to show you, I don't understand what voters and Hall of Fame voters and MVP voters and I don't understand any of Heisman Trophy voters. I don't get sometimes what they think and who decides these guys get a vote. You can't bitch and complain Polamalu won. It's not exactly like it's some hack that you decided to throw the MVP to on the defensive side of the ball. But truth of the matter is, forget the hack part, Matthews deserved it. But you're not going to argue because we know what a difference maker Polamalu is. We know the difference maker Troy is. So looking at the X's and O's on the game, as we broke down yesterday, coaching staff's advantage Pittsburgh. With experience and slight advantage, and I think the second category I got to was trust. Is there a trust on both sides? And I don't care what the commissioner said. Those players trust Ben Roethlisberger on the field. No question about it, because all he does is win, and they know it. And quite frankly, that's the only place they have to trust him on Sunday and all week on the practice field. They don't have to trust him anywhere else. But I gave that a wash because as far as I think great trust in Green Bay with their injuries, they've still overcome it, and they trust each other. And Pittsburgh trusts each other because they lost their quarterback for four games, and he was able to come back, and they held the fort down until he got back, and he's had to earn their trust as a player, and he's done it. So that's a check mark on both sides. Check mark on both sides. If you're going to attack the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think a lot of teams fall into one trap. The Pittsburgh's so aggressive, you let them play to their tempo as opposed to you making them play to yours. I go back, and I'm trying to think, when Arizona played the Steelers in the Super Bowl, Arizona came out a bit timid in the first half, if I remember. And then if I'm not mistaken, like I said, I don't do stats, but certain situations, I mean, as far as my memory, stats don't stick out to me much, but situations of games do. And if I'm not mistaken, Kurt Warner came out, and I think he threw for three touchdowns and exploded for a bunch of yards in the second half and became more aggressive. That they started off a little bit trying to feel out the Steelers and then came out and Warner got him, you know, threw him back into it, if I'm not mistaken. And I think he did most of the damage and had a huge second half. If you're the Green Bay Packers, you do what you do. And I love it. You know, a lot of times teams will say, we're not worried about the other team. We're going to do what we do. But a lot of them don't live up to that, because the truth is, if you'll do what you do and live up to what you do, that's the best way to win. But you also have to understand what the other team's doing. It's called adjustment, and you do. You got to take it. That's why coaches study tape. Because you do got to know what the other team does. But I think teams make a great mistake. The bigger the spotlight, the more the pressure. A lot of teams come into this, oh my gosh, let's tiptoe around until we find out what's going on. I don't believe in that. I want you coming right out of the gate in the whole shot, getting their lead and holding the doggone thing, and then having something left in the sprint and the kick. And I don't believe in this. So let's lean back, and then try to catch them in the middle of the third quarter. That's not my MO, especially in football. You don't allow the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I'm sucking Pittsburgh, you don't allow them to dictate the tempo, because they will. They zone blitz, they fire, they set fire zone, and they're coming after you and blitzing and dropping people into zone blitz areas, and then they're going to pressure you and make it look like a zone blitz and bring the farm, and then they're going to zone. I mean, they're going to give you a lot of looks. Dick LeBeau's been in this league long enough. But what I do is I spread them out, and I see what happens when you spread them out, folks, just to give you X's and O's talk, is when you spread a team out and extend the formations and spread them out, you know what they have to do? They have to adjust to that. And it takes away, for instance, if you were to spread them out in a four-wide situation and mix that in often, like on first down, now the linebacker has to remove himself away from the line of scrimmage if he's a blitzing linebacker, because he's got to cover the slot in first down. Let's say it's not nickel package. He's got to walk out between the slot, and if he doesn't, the safety comes down, then the quarterback has a pretty good idea what the coverage is going to be. And then if they blitz and you've got an uncovered blitzer, then you can see the hot longer when you're sitting in the gun. You can see the hot longer and have a chance to get rid of the football, because things, when you spread them out, things become more easier to see, easier to decipher. See, because when you have, tight formations, you can't really tell, okay, is the linebacker coming? This linebacker's sugaring in and out. Oh, the safety's coming off the slot. Wait a minute, the corner's coming. And there's a lot of confusion because there's so many bodies. But when you spread them out, you force the defense to spread out, and you make them either commit to the blitz early so you can see it, and if they commit to the blitz or the pressure late, you can see it, and they can't get to you, so you can throw your hot, and the quarterback's not taking as many hits. Now, a lot of people think, well, if you spread them out and stuff, quarterback's going to take more hits because you're not sound protection-wise. Well, he'll take his hits, but he'll also get the ball out of his hand quicker and be able to decipher it. You're going to get hit in this game as a quarterback. With both teams playing zone blitzing and creating confusion, and with the tempo that these guys play, you're going to get hit. Rodgers and Roethlisberger know going into this game that their jersey's not going to be clean and their chin's not going to feel good. They're going to get hit. How do you withstand the punishment? So limit the hits, or at least limit the pressure, and spread them out if you're playing Pittsburgh. And now, the truth is, if you're playing Green Bay, you might want to do the same thing, because they're very similar when it comes to that. Aggressive, they get after it, they attack. But the main thing is, whether you spread them out or you go to your normal, you've got to do what you do best. You can't allow Super Bowl week and the intensity to change your approach. I would really, honestly, and I'm talking about attacking the Steelers, I'll get to the Packers in a second. I think you study some of the Arizona tape in the second half of that game. You cannot wait. You can't wait, or it's too late. Then they got you down by 10, 12, 14 points. Now they can do a lot of things and put you in bad situations. I believe you got to attack them. You got to attack their aggressiveness with being aggressive. Being timid against the Pittsburgh Steelers, it's like being timid to a bully. They see it, and they bully you worse. You got to fight back and hit back. I'm Sean Salisbury. It's Voice America Sports. We are Unfiltered, talking about how to attack these two defenses right here on Sean Salisbury Unfiltered, Voice America Sports. We'll be back.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN. It's more than a sports show. Tune in every Friday for End of the Bench with Tony Bowie. Tony knows and does it all. Whether it's sports, business, or politics, the discussion all comes to focus in one place. You'll hear from the personalities as well as the everyday people, each bringing their own perspective to the discussion. This is a weekly forum that you'll want to be a part of. End of the Bench with Tony Bowie airs live every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. That's 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Super Bowl champ Lionel Dalton is taking to the internet airwaves with his own brand of sports talk. You'll go inside the mind of the players and find out if blacklisting really happens, what their thoughts are on training camps, where the former NFL players are now, and why being drafted by the wrong NFL team can kill a promising player's career. Lionel will also cover what's up with the Baltimore Ravens. Tune in to Sports Talk with Lionel Dalton live every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific on the Voice America Sports Channel.
The opening kickoff is a beauty.
It's a fly ball deep right field. Back goes O'Neal. He's at the
shot.
Got it with 2.8 seconds left
to left. I don't care where they put him.
From high school to the pros, we cover everything. Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
You're locked in to Sean Salisbury Unfiltered on the Voice America Sports Channel. To make your voice heard, call in to 888-346-9144. That's 888-346-9144. Or send an email to seansals@gmail.com. That's seansals@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
We're back talking about breaking it down, and my man AC called and I'm having a little technical difficulty with mine pulling up my emails, but the gist of it is that Roger Goodell is basically out of line and went the route of TMZ, and he created this news, and he's a megalomaniac. And I appreciate the email, and he also said that Clay Matthews deserved the defensive MVP. And when I can pull it up, I'm going to read it again because it was a great. I read it, and then it kind of went away, and I can't find it, and then I read it again, and so I'm just paraphrasing, but I'll pull that up, AC. It was a great email, and if you want to call in, if you can, feel free. If not, we got all week to talk about it. But, you know, he's all over the commissioner for doing what he did, and he's out of line. And I couldn't agree more. What the commissioner did is we reset this now. We're talking about the commissioner and his throwing Ben Roethlisberger under the bus months later for no reason, saying that not one of his teammates came to his rescue that he interviewed during the process. The process is long since over. He served his suspension. He's moving forward. I don't condone what Ben Roethlisberger did or what he allegedly did. But why during Super Bowl week did he want to create this news? Because he needed to focus on him as the commissioner, as if he doesn't get enough publicity how it is and is makes more money or makes as much money or more than the players? I don't want to hear it. Why? I don't understand why the commissioner felt the need on a Monday during Super Bowl week to beat the living hell out of Ben Roethlisberger and say none of his players came to his rescue. Tell me why. Why now? I don't get it. What purpose did it serve, and what did it have to do with the game, and why create the news that he so badly tries to do everything he can to squash? Why? Are we now to the point where we've turned everybody, where everybody's got to have an ego, where... Now, maybe that's the reason why we can't get a CBA done, is because the people in charge, their egos are so big that they can't even see them, so they can't even walk through a door. And now we want to create it by throwing Roethlisberger under the bus, yet you're the one who limited the suspension by two games. It was supposed to be six. You lowered it to four. Now, 5 months later, 4 months later, you're coming back and telling us that Ben Roethlisberger, none of his teammates came to his rescue. Why now? And thanks a lot, Captain Obvious, as if we didn't know that Ben Roethlisberger's teammates weren't exactly supporting him through all that, stripping him of his captaincy. That being said, Ben's quite sure and quite secure that people did come to his rescue and thank them publicly for it. Sure hasn't affected his play, has it? And they are in the Super Bowl, so the joke's on the rest of the league. But why the commissioner felt the need now to have to say that? Why'd you cut a suspension, Commissioner? That's what I want to know. Like I said, I've been a fan of the Commissioner. I think he's gone overboard in certain situations. I think all in all, he's a good Commissioner. He's not above criticism, and anybody that's afraid to criticize him is a pussy, okay? If you're on TV and you're afraid to criticize an official because of a bad call because you're worried that the Commissioner will come down on you, if you're afraid to commit a, criticize the commissioner because, oh, we air the football games and the commissioner is going to hold it against us, then you're a pussy. Simple, plain and simple. He's not above criticism. If he's allowed to criticize players and officials and coaches and people for making mistakes, we're allowed to criticize the commissioner because he's not God for making a mistake, and this was a mistake. It won't be an admitted mistake, I assure you that, but it's just a simple case of creating news that didn't need to be created, and that's exactly what he did. Still a fan? I don't buy what he did was right, and I think he overstepped his bounds. I don't think the commissioner should be, you know, prancing into that. I'm not quite sure when certain parts of things happen, the commissioner thinks that they got to be involved in everything. Just like government thinks they need to be involved in everything, like putting a stop to what's just what we need is the government to get involved in this work stoppage between the NFL and the players. Just what we need with those buffoons who can't even manage their own house to come and try to regulate what goes on and try to tell us how the negotiation should end when they don't know how to negotiate their ass from their mouth. The last thing we need in the NFL is a government official or government getting involved in what goes on in the NFL. They can't even handle themselves. So the president and the rest of you guys, stay out of this. We don't need you. We're having enough trouble with the commissioner and Demory Smith, the head of the players union, getting it solved. The last thing we need to do is to get all that crazy bullshit that the government brings to the table and let them muddy the waters. You want the possible labor strike to continue and to get worse? Bring Congress or the president or them involved and watch what happens. That's just what we want to do to the NFL is allow those clowns to get involved. And it wouldn't matter if they're Democrat, Republican, or anything else. I could care less. They have no place in this, just like they had no place in a Major League Baseball steroid scandal. Unless you're going to send somebody to jail, that part. But you don't have a place in trying to decide what's been past strikes and the rest of it. Sorry, I like government out of it. Police ourselves. That's why we hire people. And Bud Selig's of the world are paid $10 million a year, or David Stearns or Roger Goodell, because they're supposed to be able to handle this stuff. Why we got to get government involved in everything. Folks, look at our country. You want them involved in fixing your player strike possible and your labor strife with the union and the players? I don't think so. I think the commissioner overstepped his bounds in what he said about Ben Roethlisberger and his teammates yesterday. Did not need to be said, especially during this week. If you're going to say it, you had all season to say it. Why now? And AC's exactly right. That what did Polamalu do in 12 games is what he said. That Matthews didn't do in 16, but I think it was 15. I think Matthews missed a game. Nothing. Troy is a hell of a player and without Matthews, he's the MVP in the league defensively. But this year, right now, and you can give it to either guy, but in truth, playing 15 games at his position, the demands of the position with all the injuries and the way he had to carry the weight of the team defensively, you know, Bigby got hurt. Al Harris got hurt. Your running game got hurt, so you're going to be on the field more as a defense. And Clay Matthews, I deserve the MVP this year. But our voters get it wrong. Michael Vick shouldn't have been the comeback player of the year. The comeback player of the year belonged to E.J. Henderson in Minnesota. That's your comeback player of the year. But our voters, you know, the voters, they just don't get it. They don't get it. Can't wait till we go to town on who's going to get elected this weekend to the Hall of Fame. That ought to be an interesting one, huh? Watch the snubs that happen this week and watch and tell me how much you really love and respect the Hall of Fame voters after this weekend when we elect our new Hall of Fame class of 2011. You got to attack the Pittsburgh Steelers in one way, folks. You got to be aggressive and beat them at their own game. You got to attack them and get after them. You've got to be aggressive. You've got to do what you do, and you've got to go after them. You cannot allow them to continually dictate the tempo with their pressure. Because if you do, you'll be in trouble. You'll turn the ball over, and they will feed off you. The other way around, it's the same way. Now, Pittsburgh, I think what happens, Pittsburgh can try to apply a little more physicality and apply their will to them. I think in this game, I don't believe that the Pittsburgh Steelers need to throw the ball or want to throw the ball 30, 35 times. I don't think you want to do that. Now, that being said, if the game's close at the end and Ben Roethlisberger's got the ball in his hands, I like Pittsburgh's chances. When you play the Pittsburgh Steelers, when you play the Green Bay Packers defensively, you must do a couple things. You've got to put your ego aside and put your, as an offensive line coach and as an offensive coordinator, you've got to put your ego aside and not say, well, our guy will just block him, we'll go one-on-one. You're not going to go one-on-one all day and deal with blocking Clay Matthews. You're just not. So don't. And you better be aware of corner cats, which is a corner blitz, because Charles Woodson will get in the backfield often if you don't. And Pittsburgh used to do that so many times with Rod Woodson in his day. So they're used to that. But you've got to do everything you can. Egos, and in this game, ego's got to put aside. Pride's great. Ego can be a problem. Because I've been on teams, for instance, we had Gary Zimmerman, our left tackle in Minnesota, who's a Hall of Famer. He's in the Hall of Fame right now. Matter of fact, the left side of our line's in the Hall of Fame right now. Randall McDaniel, left guard, Gary Zimmerman, left tackle. Both deserve to be in there. Both are. The problem is, when you played Lawrence Taylor, as good as Gary Zimmerman was, you still had to give him help at times, chipping a back, bringing a tight end in motion over there. Because there's a certain player, it doesn't matter how good the other guy is, there's not many Anthony Munozes playing in the league that are athletic enough and strong enough to manhandle any rusher there is. But and Clay Matthews is one of those guys that his motor runs for so many minutes and so often that you can't just put a right tackle on him. And Pittsburgh Steelers offensive line hasn't been their best offensive line. And now they're going to be depth-wise because Pouncey's a day-to-day thing. They don't know what's going to happen with Pouncey at center. So you're going to have to give your tackle help, which obviously limits your ability to get more people out, excuse me, and flood zones and do the things you need to do. But you do not want to sit there and say, my ego's big enough that we're just going to block Clay Matthews with one guy the whole game. If you do, or if you decide to put your tackle on somebody else and then a back in the assignment draws Clay Matthews, the back's going to get his ass kicked the entire game. So put your ego aside and do the things you need to do to protect and be right. And that's how you must attack Green Bay. You must take Clay Matthews completely out of this ball game. Because if you don't, you are in trouble. Because he can turn the game around single-handedly. Now, another way that I would attack Pittsburgh folks is I would attack the perimeter and the corners. I like the matchup of Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and the Jordy Nelsons on the Ike Taylors. I like that. I think the Green Bay advantage. I don't think Pittsburgh has great cornerback play. I think you can get after him and attack him, and I think that you can make huge plays against him. That is when it comes to that, and we'll get down to breaking down exactly names and bodies, but this is kind of an overall view of how to attack a defense. If you're Green Bay, take your chances outside. Now, on the other side, I'm not sure that's a great Pittsburgh Steeler advantage with Woodson. Now, you're going to have to take your shots, both teams. I believe in the old Oakland Raider philosophy of stretching the defense out and early in a game throw a deep ball, take a chance deep once or twice, and then you get the corners backing up a step or two. Now we can start working our underneath game. I believe in that. I believe you stretch a defense early and often to see how they adjust at the corner position. But when you're playing against the Pittsburgh Steelers, I believe you can attack the corners and pound the outside lanes. I do. When you start to run crossing routes and inside stuff with the safeties and the Woodleys and the Farriers and the Harrisons that can cover and hit you in the mouth, there's danger zone and turnovers. They hit you, force the ball in the air, force the ball on the ground, and then recoveries happen. I think you pound the outside lanes. I don't think you want to work a whole lot of game in between the hash marks. Now, you get too deep zone or something, you'll take a shot every now and then down the middle. You have to. Or you get your back isolated on somebody, or a slot guy on a linebacker. But I don't think you have a lot of success working the inside part of the field because they will hammer and pound the hell out of you and hit you until you're blue in the face. But you can attack the outside lanes, comebacks, curls, outcuts, run by them. I think that you can do that. Get play action, little bootleg, get Aaron Rodgers on the edge and throw the ball and pound the outside lanes. I think you can attack Pittsburgh that way. Matter of fact, I know you can. On the other side, the corners of Green Bay are far better than the corners of Pittsburgh. They just are. Now you've got Hines Ward, who's a possession, go across the middle guy, who you got to love. You've got Mike Wallace, who is your run by you, get deep. One of the fastest guys in the NFL. Green Bay will be aware of that, and they'll do everything they can to prevent it. You're Pittsburgh, you still got to hope that you get a pass interference call or take a shot to Mike Wallace. Play to your strengths. Play to your strengths. You just got to. And I'm going to tell you what something that I don't understand why we don't see it more. When I was in Seattle as a player, Steve Largent, who was not fast but quick, every now and then, you know, Steve wasn't our deep guy. Daryl Turner was. Steve Largent wasn't our run-by-people guy. But you know what? Every now and again, we'd put him on a little double move, or he'd set him up, or he'd look like he's going to run a curl route, and he'd run by, and he'd get a deep play because he set it up so well and because of the way he ran routes. And you could possibly do that with a Hines Ward, because that's the guy they expect him to be playing horizontal football in this game. If you're Green Bay, you don't expect Hines Ward to be running vertical. You expect him to be running horizontal, crossing routes, catch and run over the middle, catch a hitch route, catch it in, and then make something happen. And then if he's not, he's one of those receivers that can take over a game, too, by just helping out and blocking. He still makes a difference in a game, does Hines Ward, when he's not catching footballs. So if you're Green Bay, you're thinking, okay, this is a crossing route. This is their horizontal football player. Mike Wallace is their vertical player. Get a mix of Randall L once in a while getting vertical. That's the way you look at it if you're Pittsburgh. I mean, if you're Green Bay and Pittsburgh. But if you're Pittsburgh, I wouldn't miss it in a while and give myself a shot or so by from Hines Ward. You know, run a slant and go. Get him deep once in a while because they don't expect it. And to me, deception's the greatest thing an offense can create to a defense. You don't have to line up and do the things everybody expects you to do because Mike Wallace is the deep threat, and Mike's the only one who's got to run deep. I do believe you can attack and use your other weapons to do something that they normally not capable of doing, or normally we wouldn't expect them to be capable of doing. Hines Ward's not slow. He can still beat you, and he's physical enough to get by you. You may want to attack that, but you're not going to make a living down the field against Green Bay's corners. You're going to make a living pounding Mendenhall, bootlegging with Ben Roethlisberger, working your tight ends. This is a team where you actually can work a little bit of the middle of the field. It's quite opposite. You attack on the outside lanes against Pittsburgh. You attack on times on the inside against Green Bay. Now, Green Bay's got, I mean, folks, Nick Collins is a Pro Bowl player too. Now with Tremont Williams, we've got three guys that are Pro Bowl secondary. So you've got to be careful. This is why you don't want to make it a passing fancy, because if it becomes a passing fancy, Roethlisberger drops back, you risk getting a hit because of the motor that runs and the zone blitzes and the things that Green Bay does. If you mix it in and can keep him off balance, now Clay's got to defend the run too, so you got to keep him around. He can't cut it loose. You can't let him put his hand on the ground and get a three-point stance and a track stance and go after Ben Roethlisberger. Now, once you get to Ben Roethlisberger, you still got to tackle him. The best play extender in the league at quarterback, because he's so big and physical. And he finishes at the other end of it. It's not one thing getting there, but you got to bring him down because he's a finisher. He's a Mariano Rivera of the National Football League. The phone number here is 888-346-9144. He is the Mariano Rivera of the National Football League. Ben Roethlisberger is a flat-out closer. So to attack him, if you're Pittsburgh to attack, you got to run. You got to attack them down in the middle. You don't want to play east-west run game because they're way too fast on Green Bay's defense, and they run and chase great. But you get Ben on the edge, you pound the tight ends, you mix in the throw. And if you keep an eye on this game, the closer to 20 throws as opposed to closer to 30 throws, I think that's a Pittsburgh advantage. If it creeps up over 30 throwing the ball, I think Pittsburgh's out of their routine. We'll come back and talk more about this. I'm Sean Salisbury. We're Unfiltered. It's Voice America Sports. A lot of hot topics rolling on. It's 888-346-9144. Be right back.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
Each week, take a visit inside the locker room of your favorite sport with Dez Clark, Paul Fresh Clark, and Lester Scudder Davis as they bring you sportsmanlike conduct. As a current player, Dez Clark can bring you inside the sports world like nobody can. His co-hosts represent the fans of the sports world. With both points of view on the table, it becomes an engaging and entertaining program, to say the least. Sportsmanlike Conduct can be heard Tuesdays, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Never be satisfied. Let that be a lesson you take away from Double Time with Double D, featuring businessman and former NFL star Dave Duerson. We'll talk about the NFL with special focuses on the game itself, and Double D will take your calls and answer your emails live on the show. It's not Football 101, but rather an in-depth look in the locker room, on the field, away from the field, and opening up the mind of the player. The program will also feature positive messages, so tune in to Double Time with Double D, Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Okay, sports fans, here's your opportunity to discuss football, America's favorite sport. On an annual basis, millions of people attend, watch, and listen to football, both pro and college. Ray Ellis Sports, an internet talk radio show, was developed with the fan in mind. Join host former Philadelphia Eagles and Cleveland Browns strong safety, Ray Ellis, on Voice America Sports every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific for exciting, interactive football discussions from the fans' perspective. Tune in every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific to Ray Ellis Sports, right here on the Voice America Network. And let's talk football.
The fans now have a voice to speak their mind. No holds barred.
They need to bench his ass and then move on.
I just think that the coach made a mistake.
All crazy.
NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL. Speak up.
Speak up.
Or forever hold your mouth.
We ain't playing around here.
Voice America Sports.
You're locked in to Sean Salisbury Unfiltered on the Voice America Sports Channel. To make your voice heard, call in to 888-346-9144. That's 888-346-9144. Or send an email to SeanSals@gmail.com. That's SeanSals@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
About 30 minutes left here on a miserable weather day in Dallas, and doesn't look like it's going to get any better anytime soon. Airport's closed. I'm sure people are panicked. Parties, all that. I'm not one that's panicked because I don't go to the parties. Used to. No more. I do it right for the comfort of my own home, and everybody can all live vicariously through somebody else. Show tomorrow. HBO will be in studio running some B-roll of the show. It should be exciting. They got some things going on with HBO Real Sports in February, so I'm excited to have them in studio tomorrow and doing a little filming of the show. I'll be joined tomorrow more than likely by Simeon Rice, former player, been to a Super Bowl. The reason I got Sim on is Sim will empty the bucket. Sim will tell you exactly what's on his mind. He's not afraid to tell it like it is, and he also went to film school and has got a documentary coming out, so I'm anxious to hear about that. I like to go off the beaten path sometimes. Like I said, players and coaches aren't going to tell you much right now, but I'll have Simeon Rice on tomorrow. I'm hoping at 9:30 Central Time, like the first 30 minutes of the show, get Sim on. I know he's got to speak to a school tomorrow, and looking forward to having him on. Like I said, been to a Super Bowl, been a great pass rusher. He can talk to us about James Harrison and Clay Matthews He gets it and has been through, you know, controversy. I think at one point he didn't show up or was late. Was it Sim, maybe, or somebody was a teammate of his? I can't even remember, but at the Pro Bowl or something on that, and I'm not saying not trouble where he was like, oh, my gosh, but if he couldn't make it to the Pro Bowl or if a teammate couldn't, but Sim will be, I can't even remember. I'll do a little, I don't know why I think it's him, but was it Simeon that didn't want to play or did play or didn't play or, I can't even remember. It may not even be him. So this is not, believe me, I'm not gossip. It wasn't a big deal like he got in trouble. It was just, I thought somebody didn't practice. Maybe it was when Andy Reid was coaching the Pro Bowl that a player had to go home. But it might not even been Sim. I shouldn't even say that because Sim's one of my favorite people. He's fun and funny, but we'll talk Super Bowl. We'll keep it to Super Bowl and his movie and going on and who he likes and why and for a guy who's been there, so why not? And I look forward to talking to him, and he can promote his new documentary and what he's doing next. But you'll like him, and I actually cover his sister is playing in the semifinals, the Final Four with Chicago Bliss, who's a good pass rusher herself, playing in the Lingerie Football League. So, and maybe we'll be able to talk to a little bit to Sim about that. But as we break this down, so, you know, the way to attack on this end, as far as attack and passing game, pure passing game, Packers advantage, period. Run game, Steeler advantage, period. Physicality, you know what, 4 or 5 years ago, I would have said Pittsburgh, and I still think they're more physical, so I'm going to give them the advantage of the physicality part, but in the physical, at the interior, at the line of scrimmage, this is not the same. This is not your dad's Pittsburgh Steelers. They are not as physical on the inside, especially now with Pouncey, who's going to be going to probably come down to a day or so before the game decision. And if he does play, you know he's not going to be at full strength. So down the middle, the Steelers aren't the old Steelers of old, where you know every guy bench presses 500 pounds. They're still physical, but not typical. They've become a little bit more finesse since Ben Roethlisberger's been a member of their team. And in the last 2 or 3 years, they've become a little bit more of a passing fancy and a pass-happy team. Now, they can still run it with Mendenhall, trust me. And I think that they have to be a balanced team to win. I don't think this is a throw 80% of the time, run 20% of the time, and feel good about yourself. I don't think that's Pittsburgh Steelers. I actually, normally I'm a 55-45, 60-40 pass, you know, run to pass, pass to, I mean, depending on how you like it. I'm one of those guys that, if I throw 30 times a game and run 30, I'm a 50-50, 55-45 guy. And either way, that just depends on, if it dictates what's going on. I know this, that it's not yards in the run game, it's attempts that usually win games. It really is. You rush 35 times for 120 yards, and the other team rushes 20 times for 120 yards. 35 attempts, it's usually, you look at the statistics, it'll tell you that attempts is usually the one, and I'm not big on stats, but attempts is a key stat in winning football games, rushing attempts. For whatever reason, you can go through any way you want, try to figure it out, but rushing attempts is a key factor in winning games. Now, there's the aberration, and there's the times when it doesn't matter. Just like when somebody throws 50 times, they usually don't win, but it does happen. So the physicality on the offensive lines, I think it's kind of a wash. I'm not so sure that the Green Bay Packers offensive line isn't as physical as, and I think they can be, and I think they are, actually. The Packers offensive line is physical as the Pittsburgh offensive line. Now, on the defensive side of the ball, when you look at just the physical nature of the way they play, I would say Pittsburgh's more physical. But when it comes to the explosiveness and hitting, Green Bay doesn't take a backseat to anybody. Safeties, really good matchup. I mean, with Polamalu, Nick Collins, that's a really good advantage. Pittsburgh, they've been there before, and they got the best strong safety in football. Corners, clear advantage, Green Bay Packers. Clear advantage. Woodson, Williams, that's a clear advantage of the Pittsburgh. And when you can lose Al Harris, a Pro Bowl player, and not miss a beat and actually get better, you're really good. You're really good. The physical nature of both teams, I would say by offense, defense, special teams, I'd probably say Pittsburgh's a little bit more physical. But I think people have mistaken Green Bay as being a finesse all-around team because they just seem more finesse because they lost their runner and they throw the ball more, which gives them your kind of guilt by association. I'm not buying into that. I don't believe, other than the aberration a few times in this league, in the history of this league, do finesse teams beat physical teams, rarely. And the Green Bay Packers didn't get here by just playing finesse football, having to win a couple games at the end of the season and then go on the road and win three to go on the road and win, to kick butt and be a wild card team and win and get to this point. The Green Bay Packers they're not a finesse team. Trust me. They got some finesse ability. That's it. Now, if you're talking about who's got a team that's better at finessing you if they have to, it's Green Bay. If it comes down to a finesse battle where you have to be finessed, Green Bay's the better finesse team. That's not what you ever want to be known by. Players take that as personal as anything, I assure you. When somebody calls you a finesse team, that means basically the finesse is a kinder way for some to call you a little bit soft. But I don't mean this in soft. If I thought a team was soft, and I've seen soft teams, I'll tell you that they're soft. And there are soft teams in this league that let you push them around and bully them. Neither one of these teams have that in them. Now, a finesse team, I'm using it in a good term, meaning if I got to drop back and throw 15, 20 times in a row, who's the advantage? Green Bay. Better all-around receiving core. Better screen game. A better passer. Roethlisberger is a winner, but Rodgers is clearly the better passer. And they just look prettier doing it, if that's the case. So if it's down to a game where you have to throw, both teams were in a, you know, lost running backs again and had to throw every down, that advantage swings to the Packers. But then it comes down to, while it swings to the Packers throwing it, who's the advantage face on rushing the passer and getting after it? Well, the Pittsburgh Steelers got more great defensive players overall than the Green Bay Packers. So see, it's you win one and then you lose one. That's why this is such a special, evenly matched, great game. It's so awesome because while, okay, you get into a passing, you get to be happy, Green Bay advantage, but then if you're pass happy, uh-oh, Pittsburgh now can tee off. There you go. If it gets into a physical war, well, you say, okay, Pittsburgh may have the advantage, but guess what? Physical war, underrated Clay Matthews when it comes to physicality. They got him as this, oh, just the motor runs, but he's physical too. Charles Woodson, one of the best tackling corners in the league. They'll hit you. And all you got to do is address them as a finesse team, and they'll hit you like you've never been hit. They'll get after it. These teams do not like that. And they will not play that way in this game. This game has the capability of being 17-13, but it also has the capability of being 34-31. It really does. I don't know yet. I'm not sure how I would, just like, didn't think the Baltimore Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers would be in a 31-24 game, but that became a game of scoring and mistakes. This game can be too. I think they'll both be buttoned up, but what happens? The intensity of a Super Bowl goes up, and the nerves, they don't get started early. See, when the intensity goes up and nerves are shot, what happens is the defense has an advantage right off the bat because they just let the aggressiveness take over. They can be extremely aggressive and take over and get that out of them. If the offenses, you got to be more methodical. You got to be more of a thinking man's offense or team. You got to be, I mean, offensive players. You've got to be more into it. And I don't want to say mentally into it because you got to be into it defensively, especially if you're giving a lot of looks. But I mean, you know, like quarterbacks, you're thinking you got to deal with all 22 players. You've got to read defenses, direct your offense, get the snap count, get the play in and out. So you've got to think a little more. You've got to become more cerebral. And when the pressure goes up, you know, you start to hyperventilate a little bit, and the cerebral part, things seem to be faster than they should be, and you start to speed things up. What happens in any part of life, folks, when you're going into an interview for a new job? You may talk a little faster, you speed things up, you want to get it all in, and before you know it, you know, you're starting to sweat a little more, and you're not yourself. But if you're not yourself going into a boxing match, what do? You say, screw it, forget thinking, let me just get hit and let me hit, and now we can get after it, and I can get those nerves out of me and that initial hyperventilation and that, oh my gosh, the stage of how many millions of people are watching, which the choke factor comes in. But taking that, the you know, doling out and taking punishment kind of gets rid of that first, because then it pisses you off. You just got hit. It's like, okay, wake up, dude. But as an offensive player, a lot of times on the perimeter and moving the ball, you grip the ball a little tighter. Ball flies on you a little more. You know, we've all played in the NFL at some point in time. We played in a big game to where, you know, you come out a little higher than you need to, and it takes a while to settle in. And it would not shock me if it took these offenses a little while to settle in. You know, very rarely do you come out like the 49ers did against the Chargers and boom, Steve Young hitting Jerry Rice down the middle of the field in a big post route for a touchdown, where you, right off the bat, it's like, uh-oh, here we go, and then hang 50-plus points. That was just boom. But the God in the world knew that the Chargers had absolutely no shot to beat the 49ers in that game. And so did the 49ers. And they came out and bam, exploded, and right off the bat. But normally, for the most part, it may take a little while, whether it's special team, to get things going. And this is the type of game where you're going to feel each other out. It could be quarter and a half before offenses start to click in. You know, it could be in the first two series because you're dealing with really poised head coaches and extremely poised head quarterbacks. Both these guys are poised, so they can have a sense of calm for their football team that allows them to do it. But to me, I initially, for instance, if I won the toss, I'd probably elect to defer and kick off. Because I believe in both these defenses, and I think both of these defenses believe that they can change the course of a game by themselves. So if that's the case, if both these teams believe they can change the course of a game, why not defer and put your defense out there on the field and say, okay, by the time the second half kicks in, my offense will be ready to take that second half kickoff and go down. Let's let my defense dictate the tempo. And when I played, I always wanted our defense to be on the field first. Always wanted them to be on the field first for this very reason. Well, a couple reasons. One is if they took the ball down on our defense and made it look easy, then I knew, okay, we've got to come back out and we got to get after it because this could be one of those games where our defense doesn't have it. And if you're down 7-0, now I know how to approach it. They kick off, we get the ball on the 18, on the 25, on the 30, bam. Then you have an idea how to approach it and what you're going to see and what kind of game it may be. Now, you don't always dictate it by one series, but a lot of times you can get an idea of the tempo and the feeling when you're in the building. The other reason for me was that I always believed that our defense would get us great field position, get a stop, block a punt, you know, get a sack where they're punting from their own 4-yard line and we get the ball at the 50. Now we could strike then. So I always liked my defense to be on the field first. Now as a coach it may be different, but as a player that's the way I liked it. But in both of these cases I think that you believe that your defense can dictate the flow of the game. So it would not shock me whoever won the toss if they deferred. Now if you're Green Bay and you win the toss, you want to say, okay, all the talk, you know, Pittsburgh's defense, let's go shove it down their throat and take their will out of them right now. That's another reason why some offenses want the ball first. We're going to take their will and prove that this defense isn't that good, and let's kick them in the teeth, and bam, score first, where now you say, okay, we mean business. So there's so many different ways to look at it. And I think during the week on the practice field, you get an idea, and if I'm a head coach, I go to my team and I say, when we win the coin toss, what do you guys want to do? I would allow my captains to tell me what we want to do, and if they overwhelmingly, see, I believe players, I don't believe this is a dictatorship. Well, I do believe that coaches obviously have the final say and you got to respect what you do, but the players are on the field, they get a feel of the tempo, they get an understanding of how they're feeling and their aggressiveness in the locker room before the game. I'd get my captains together and say, what do you guys want to do if you win the toss? Because it does matter. And I'd want my captains, I'd say, if three of them or four of them say, let's kick, and the other one says, let's not, then I'm kicking. I want to go with the feel of my players, and I want them to know that I got their back. And I would also, the night before at my team meeting, I would have one on our team meeting when you're getting your speeches ready and everybody's jacked up and nervous. And in the team meeting, I would sit there and say, okay, guys, it's 4th and 1. We're at the 35-yard line. It's in the first quarter. I would actually see how my players felt about, we're going for it. And I would already know in my mind on 4th and 1, inside mid the other team's midfield that I was going for it. And there would be no hesitation in the game early. Now, obviously, the game will dictate if you do that late in the game. But I'm talking about right off. Just like Bill Walsh, I think they scripted the first 15 plays. It might have been 15, might have been 12, whatever it was. They always scripted their first 15 plays, and they ran them. They knew what their third play was, their sixth play was, their eighth play was. They scripted their first 15 plays. So everybody on their team knew exactly what they were doing the first 15 plays on offense. There was no guessing. No guessing. Scripted down, pat, ready to go. And I think players love to have an idea what was going on. That same tackle I was telling you about, Gary Zimmerman, wanted to know the play in the huddle before I told everybody else the play was. Whoever was. Tim always wanted to know the play. Maybe I sense me more because I would let him know. Left tackle to feel comfortable. I want my left tackle in my Hall of Fame to feel comfortable. He's got a difficult job. So I would definitely, any time I got the play in soon enough, I could tell him we're running a gut check with me. He liked to get in his mind what his assignment was. That was it was his comfort zone and security. Hall of Fame player. But he had his, and I wanted to make sure that he knew what he was getting into. I tried to appease and appeal to a guy that felt comfortable knowing we're running 40-50 gut check with me so he could, in his mind, before the play was called in the huddle, he started to process it. That's what Zim liked to do. So as a head coach in this game, if you're Mike McCarthy or Mike Tomlin, I believe you do everything you can to get your players in as quick a comfort zone as possible. Get them in their comfort zone as possible. As quickly as possible you can, so you get that tempo started right off. We're going to come back, and we're going to finish last handful of minutes of this one. Kick in tomorrow, Simeon Rice. We'll have some fun, but as we inch closer to the game, this is about starting tomorrow, and then with serious practice tomorrow, today's media day, depending on what goes on, people being able to get there. But as they inch closer to the game, business starts to kick in by Thursday. This is not a leisure trip. It's a business trip. And the only way you're happy that you made it here is if you win. If you win, the experience is memorable. If you lose, the experience sucks. No matter how much fun you had during the week. The one thing these players got to keep focused on and remember, it's only fun when you win. They can give a trophy to both teams and say, hey, thanks, congratulations, here's your consolation. Nobody wants the consolation prize because 5 years from now, nobody gives a rat's ass who was in the Super Bowl that finished second. I'll finish this up with a few minutes on the backside of this break. I'm Sean Salisbury. We're Unfiltered.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iRadioBlog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
It's football, pop culture, and everything in between. Get ready for The Game Plan with Anthony Herron, a.k.a. Big Ant. Anthony has a background in college and professional football and brings the player, coach, and broadcaster perspective to this weekly roundup of the top sports news and events. Big Ant wants to hear from you, too. Tune in to The Game Plan with Anthony Herron every Tuesday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Sports Channel. It's game time.
Get the inside scoop on the Georgia Bulldogs. Tune in to Keelan Johnson on College Football Game Day on the radio and every day on KeelanJohnson.com. On Keelan's Keeping It Real Radio, you can talk to Keelan and his former teammates about the Bulldogs, college football, and all things sports. Keelan's the go-to analyst for Bulldog football on pre- and post-game television on KeelanJohnson.com. And now, every week on the Voice America Sports Channel. Tune in every college game day for Keelan Johnson, Keeping It Real Radio. Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern and 8 a.m. Pacific.
The fans now have a voice to speak their mind. No holds barred.
I just think that the coach made a mistake.
All crazy.
NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL. Speak up.
Speak up.
Or forever hold your mouth.
We ain't playing around here.
Voice America Sports.
You're locked in to Sean Salisbury Unfiltered on the Voice America Sports Channel. To make your voice heard, call in to 888-346-9144. That's 888-346-9144. Or send an email to SeanSalz@gmail.com. That's SeanSalz@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Oh, a couple minutes left as we wind down. I was watching Letterman last night, and he was talking about Charlie Sheen. I mean, you know what? One thing about Charlie, and I always like to get my Charlie Sheen talk in, and going to rehab, and, you know, you hope it works out. He makes $1.8 to $2 million an episode. He had the top 10 list about Charlie Sheen last night. But have you ever noticed, Charlie's a ball hog. Have you ever noticed it's never Charlie, two guys, and four girls? It's always Charlie and five women. Charlie and three women. I mean, what a ball hog. And you know, I'm a fan of the show, and I hope that it works out for him. It's strange. I mean, it's every single week it's something new, but CBS just got themselves another eight more episodes, because Charlie, and they can bring the rehab into it, and this is what Charlie does, and CBS has got the number one comedy. It's going to halt a little bit of, as I said yesterday, going to halt some of the production, but you know what? He keeps putting money in their pocket. He's untouchable when it comes to that. 2.5 men ain't 2.5 men without that one man. But listening to Letterman last night, and I started to think, I said, man, what a ball hog. All that money, He loves to have all that fun with women and the rest of it. Obviously, it's well stated. No, there's no secret. But he's a ball hog. I never hear Charlie Sheen, his buddy, two of his friends, and five women. It's Charlie Sheen and five women. Charlie Sheen in Vegas with three women. Charlie in Vegas with two women. Charlie in L.A. with four women. Where's the fellas at? I mean, can he actually handle all those women by himself? I mean, come on now, team player. Don't be a ball hog. You got to have some fellas, some of your boys. With all that money you make, do you say, you know, I'm going to take care of the fellas? I'm going to take care of some of the fellas. So it's me, three guys, and five women. But it's always Charlie and five chicks. And what are these women, I mean, unless they're into each other, do they get theirs? It's a crazy concept. Charlie runs a strange, strange life. The highest guy, the highest paid talent ever in TV, I believe. I mean, the Friends crew, I think, got up to $1 million an episode, maybe, all six of them. Charlie's at almost $2 million, right around $2 million an episode. I don't believe we've ever had a TV talent, not movie, talking about like a 30-minute sitcom talent make $2 million bucks an episode. Whoever his agent is, send him my way. Please. And I won't go to rehab. I don't have to. Don't do that stuff. Don't do drugs. Man. And it would be Sean, three of his buddies, and all right, some women don't want to join. I don't get it all, but you know what? He sure as hell isn't getting cheated, is he? We'll talk more football tomorrow, and I'm sure I'll hear something about Charlie between now and tomorrow. Just turn the show into 3.5 men. Add me to it. I'll help production. I could say something stupid and make John Cryer laugh. And I'll do it for half the money Charlie's getting paid. Sean, Charlie, John Cryer, and that half dude. He's no longer a half dude. He's bigger than most. The kid is. All right. We'll be back tomorrow. Sim Rice will join me at 9:30. Simeon Rice. I'm Sean Salisbury. Voice America Sports. We're unfiltered. Break down every single aspect of this game as we have the first 2 days. Be safe, folks. Talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks for tuning in to Sean Salisbury Unfiltered. We hope you'll come back weekdays at 10 a.m. in the East, 7 a.m. in the West, on the Voice America Sports Channel. Take care.